Hey everyone, and welcome back to the Adopting and Fostering Home Podcast. Wherever you are on your fostering or adopting journey, we're here to provide the resources and tools you need. And I think today's guest will be a great source of encouragement to you. If you're already serving in foster care or you've already adopted as a family, I'm sure you've had a story like we have of struggles you face or obstacles you've had to overcome. But isn't it just refreshing when you can connect with another family, hear their story, and see how God's working in their lives? Well, I want to welcome my friends today, Randall and Kelly Nichols. They have five kids. The Lord's built their family through the conventional way and through adoption like our family. So welcome, friends. I'm so glad you're here today.
Thank you.
We're happy to be here.
Yeah.
Oh, thanks, Randall. Well, you know, whoever wants to jump in first, just share your story with us just so our listeners can get to know you, how the Lord started all this with you guys and what it looks like now.
Yeah, absolutely. So, like you said, we have five kids, we have three bio kids. And we have always talked about adoption just from early on when our kids were really small. We just didn't really know what it would look like, but we had those conversations for a long time. We had the opportunity to kind of step into the foster care system, when we were at a church in North Carolina and really partner with like a young mom as she worked to reunify with her son. And that definitely just kind of lit that fire under. Like, we're going to do this. We're going to do this soon. And so this is where it gets funny because we know God has a sense of humor. We just decided, you know, we are going to just have bio kids until we're 35. And then at 35, we're just going to say, okay, we're done. Like, whether it's 3, 4, whatever, we're done. And then we will shift gears and look at foster care and adoption. But the reason that we chose that number, 35, was significant is because we knew that the risk of having some sort of like genetic issue or complicated pregnancy or, you know, all of those things increase once the mom hits that 35-year-old age. And the funny, humorous part about it is that then we wound up adopting not one, but two kids that both have Down syndrome, which of course we love now, but it's so
right.
Funny.
Yeah, what a nice, neat little plan you had going there.
Right.
That is so funny. And so the kids came, they're two little girls. Is that right?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Two little girls. And yeah, you know, the Lord does have a way of just, Randall, I know you write about this, but just kind of showing us, you know, our fears, we just give to him and he just takes the reins. And boy, it is terrifying.
It is terrifying. And I think I've given up. No, I haven't actually. I wanted to say that I think I've given up on really kind of saying that, you know, that I have it all figured out. And then, you know, we get into something big and I try to control it. And then the Lord, you know, quickly shows us that he's still bigger than, you know, whatever smarty pants thing that I figured.
Right.
I think
with Down syndrome specifically, but maybe any medical need.
Right.
You've adopted, so, you know, and if anybody's walked through that adoption process, you have that long list, right, that you mm-hmm. check on, you like, what can you, and so for me, it was just kind of like, yep, check. But like we say in our marriage all the time that I'm the gas and Randall's the brakes. And
it's
a good thing for him to be like, whoa, hold up. Let's ask some good questions. We kind of became aware of a need for a child with Down syndrome. And I think that need specifically opened our eyes to, there are a lot of kids out there that have, you know, get the prenatal diagnosis of Down syndrome, and then the family tries to make an adoption plan and there aren't a lot of families saying yes. And so, you know, again, my heart was like, yep, all right, 100% in, like hit the gas, let's go. And Randall's, it took him a little longer, I think, but he got on board.
Well, and here's the thing that I think at least in our relationship that really works itself out is that because she's the gas, there's this conversation that was almost like it's almost like a drip campaign, like a marketing campaign where she's just feeding an idea. And I might be pushing down on the brakes, but a little bit of that kind of gets into the psyche enough for me, who is a slow processor. I want to think about it all and study it all and understand it all. It's enough for me to be curious and to go and explore. And I think the way that I process that is is to really do the research. And, you know, that is what led to us being, you know, introduced to an opportunity to consider adoption of a child with Down syndrome.
So. Right. And ultimately, you know, where we both landed, some of us sooner than others, was that if we had had a biological child with any kind of special need, we would have figured it out, right? We would have done, like you said, done the research. We would have talked to the people. And then we would have said, yes, absolutely. Like, God will equip us. And so saying yes to this need ahead of time really felt no different than that. Like there's a child out there that has, a need for a family, and we could be this family and we'll figure it out.
Yeah. And I think too, for other couples who you've got one who's further down this route than others, most of the time, I think it's probably, you know, the compassionate person is probably the more compassionate person is the one that's running faster down this road, and the more logical person is probably the one that's kind of trying to understand it all. But I think if there can be some, it's not that that the person pressing the brakes is trying to throw cold water on
that's
it.
That's right.
It's a matter of really trying to make sure that our family is equipped and as prepared as possible for the impact of this significant change.
Yeah, because it's a huge change. Yeah. And like you said, you just have to keep digging for the resource. But I love what you said, Kelly. If you knew that you were carrying a child with Downs, you would put the work in, right? Like,
right.
Yeah, the Lord would champion that for you.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, you also shared when we talked earlier, I love the statement that you said, because I don't know that I was there yet. Like when we stepped into it, I didn't think about this. We stepped in this 21 years ago, but you said you knew you could do it because of your community. Man,
yeah,
that has just stuck with me.
Yeah, I think for us it was we were in a really thriving church community, the people around us, and I think that for us when we started talking about it, there was this there was almost this sort of cheerleading that happened around it. And it gave us some confidence that maybe we didn't have or wouldn't have had if they weren't there to really kind of support us that way. And then when it came time for fundraising, they showed up in big ways. And not only just, you know, with the dollars, but really showed up when we would have public fundraising events and things like that, showed up in presence as well.
Right.
To be there and celebrate, and showed up at the airport when we came home. You know, it's just all these things. And so when it came time for the second adoption, we had a very compressed timeline.
Right. Well, with our first adoption, we started talking about it for months. So of course our small group, our community, the people, like, you know, in those inner circles knew, were praying along with us. And like Randall said, cheerleading us along, like, you guys can do this. This is amazing. When I saw our daughter's advocacy post, you know, Randall had run into like the grocery store to grab that quick dinner, and he came out and I was like, this is our daughter and she's in China. And he was like, we're not adopting from China. I'm like, yes, we are. and it was, you know, that, and our group, we messaged our group and we're like, help us pray. And by the end of the night, we just felt so at peace and so confident that this is what God was asking us to do, that we submitted that big non-refundable deposit and our commitment to her like that evening by midnight. And then, you know, but the adoption process through China is a long process. Mm-hmm. So like Randall said, they showed up for fundraisers and they showed up at the airport, and then they kept showing up. You know, they'd do a Costco run or they'd leave like a casserole on the porch. They pick up our kids and like take our kids bowling, our big kids, because they were, you know, done with us and doctor's appointments and all of those things. But with our youngest daughter, from the call that we got about her, which we weren't in the process of adopting, we were kind of talking about what it would look like to say yes again. But we got a call about her. There's a baby on the opposite coast that has Down syndrome and some other significant medical needs, and we need a family for her, and we need one fast. Her bio mom is going to have to leave this country and wants to know that there's a family before she has to leave. From that call on a Wednesday night, it was 5 days later that I was on a plane. We had 5 days, but like we said, that was an easy yes, because, I mean, first of all, you know, it was literally someone calling saying there's a baby that needs a family. What are you going to say? Yes or no?
Yeah.
So it's an easy yes, but we also knew, you know, we have a really short timeline to get our funding together, and to just do all of those things to prepare for a new baby. Because at that point we were kind of thinking, we'll adopt again and maybe we'll adopt an older child or whatever. So starting all over, you know, with a newborn, a 3 week old, and just what that looked like, we just, you know, our community rallied, like crazy rallied.
Yeah. And, you know, Kelly leaving to go, you know, to where the baby was meant that, well, we didn't all go. And so there were, we were kind of split. A couple of, she went with one of our kids, and then the rest of us were home. And, that's a quick adjustment to make.
Yeah.
And it was pretty abrupt, especially on a couple of our kids. And so to have that community here at home to lean into and you know, to kind of help carry the weight during that time was just incredible. Plus, I mean, when it came time for fundraising for that particular one, our community showed up such a big way that we raised everything that we needed in those five days.
Oh, I mean, my goodness. That's incredible.
It was incredible. It was.
Yeah. And I think that's why when we were going through both of those processes, we would continually hear people say, I can never do what you do. At first it felt like, oh, that's really nice. Thank you for saying that.
Then it was awkward.
And then it was like, wait, it made us feel like we were some sort of superhero, which anybody in the adoption world knows that there are no superheroes. Mm-hmm. And then at some point we started to ask the question back to them. What do you mean by that?
Yeah.
And what it came down to was, I just don't think that I have the support that you've had to make this so successful. And so when we started asking the question, you know, is this the barrier that people face?
And learning it was the primary barrier. I think we went to CAFO that year, that spring, and just, you know, happened to end up in a breakout that talked about, why do families quit? Like, why do they start this process and then not follow through with it? Or why do foster families go through the training and then stop? And lack of support is the number one reason.
Yeah. And so when we kind of put those pieces together and for people who were saying that, you know, I can never do what you do, if the barrier is support and community, then what can we do to rally churches, equip churches, to recognize this desire in the hearts of their people and remove that barrier? And so that's when we first started talking about Echo, and before we even had a name, it was, what is our goal? Our goal would be to make sure that families who want to bring children into their home have the resources and the support for them to succeed. And so they can go from, I can never do what you do, to, if you can do it, I can do it. It's more empowering, you know, for them to be able to look at their church like we did, their community, and say, we want to do this thing. And then their church immediately get behind them and say, all right, let's do it.
Yeah. And we saw that too. I mean, we saw that in our own circles of that, you know, the people who would say, like, oh, I can never do what you do. But wait, maybe if you can do it, then we could probably do it. Uh-huh. Realizing that we're not anything amazing or that special, mm-hmm. but it's support. Right. And so kind of thinking like, okay, I'm in this inner circle. And we saw that actually the breakout that we went to, that they talk about, that is, you know, that with support, families continue on. And in fact, that support, usually, what is it, like a third of that support circle will go on to foster or adopt because of that, because they see, you know, if they can do it, we could probably do this too. Yeah. And that's what we saw in our inner circle, you know, a family that had said, you know, maybe one day we'll adopt through foster care, ended up adopting a very medically complex child internationally, and then wound up adopting a sibling set. Yeah. Another family adopted another child. I mean, you know, so we started seeing that in our inner circle of families.
Yeah, that we had the same thing happen in Louisville, and it just, Kevin and I laugh all the time saying, because people looked at us and said, well, if they can do it, if these Zells can do it, anybody can do it. And so we felt the same way. But you guys are so transparent about it. We've tried to be as well. And I think that's what I love about you, because, you know, you even, I think, Randall, you even wrote something like, if you trust God, you'll be scared out of your mind quite often.
Yes.
That's a big statement, but it's a very true statement. And nothing about the power of God, everything about us, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, that's great.
We've been talking recently about, you know, Jesus being the light of the world, and then him kind of calling us, the church, to be the light in the world. And then looking at that passage from Psalms that, you know, says that your word is a lamp to my feet and a light to my path, realizing that that light is only enough for a few steps.
Mm.
And the shadows on the side of the path are kind of scary. You know, yeah. If you've ever walked a path, mm-hmm. You know, a country road in the middle of the dark with just a flashlight, you know that the shadows that you create from just hitting the trees are probably more scary than anything else. And I think that is the call of following Jesus is, are you willing to walk through darkness with the light, knowing that he's really probably only going to give you just enough for your feet? And that is what is scary, because you just don't know. You can't anticipate the other stuff. You just mm-hmm. have to trust that the light of Jesus is consistent.
Oh, that's a great way to explain it, because I believe, you know, and I think we'd all agree that adoption is missional and it comes with warfare.
Oh, yeah, yeah, absolutely. Man. We called it the resistance.
Yeah.
And we didn't really anticipate it in the beginning, right?
Yeah,
like,
us
we knew
either.
That there would be,
yeah.
Yeah, like roadblocks, right? Like obstacles, absolutely. But literally, so I'd said, you know, with our daughter that, you know, Randall runs into the grocery store. He comes out to the car. I'm in tears. I'm like, this is our daughter. We pray about it. We ask our families. We ask our, you know, our group, like our community group, like pray about it. By midnight, we had submitted that non-refundable deposit and submitted our application and like intent to adopt her. The next morning, we were going to get up and go meet some friends at this local park. And our neighborhood at the time was like street parking. And Randall goes outside to get the car, like to, you know, get stuff ready for the, you know, like pack up the car. And he comes back in. He's like, did you not park the car where we normally Uh-oh. Do? I'm like, oh, what are wow. you talking about? Of course I did. And he's running up and down the streets in his pajamas because our car had been stolen the next morning.
Oh, wow.
And it was one of those things, like, I mean, just literally to the point that, you know, like somebody throws a brick through our window, like the air conditioning, like goes out. We have to replace the pipes. Like, they lose, you know, you're with China, you get it. They lost our letter of like our LOA, our letter of approval. Mm-hmm. They lost it en route mm-hmm. and we had to resubmit that. All of those crazy things. But what we learned is this is the resistance. And what happens after the resistance is we stay faithful. We keep walking forward. And there's a breakthrough on the other side of this. So we almost started anticipating the resistance as like a good thing. All right. Well, this means there's about to be movement. This means something's about to happen.
Yeah. Right. Every single time there was a big, you know, crossroads or intersection in the process, it was always preceded by the resistance. So every time something like that happened, it was like, okay, well, something is about to break through. We don't necessarily know what it is, but we know that something's about to break through.
Oh, man, I couldn't agree more. And it's so true. And like you, Kelly, the first time around, I didn't really catch on as quickly.
Right, you know? Right.
But the second time I got it, like I could see yes. this happening. And, you know, and it happened to us in different ways. One was with the health of one of our bio kids, our son. And and I just knew it was warfare trying to keep us from stepping into this and keep going further with it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. We started off this year, in fact, with so our organization, we haven't really talked a lot about that yet, but the organization that we run now, we kicked off this year with someone breaking into our office and stealing everything, computers, like video equipment, everything. And we kind of were like, well, I mean, yeah. there it is. It's the resistance.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, I'm sorry that happened. I know it's frustrating, but yeah, you just, okay, Lord, what you up to now? You know, it's
right.
just another, like Randall said, you just got to hold the flashlight still and take that next step.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Well, tell us about Echo, because I love the way you've taken your experience and the care you received in community and the care that you all were able to share with other people, and how when you invited people into your story, it just grew. You know, you had five or six families now jumping in, watching you guys. So you kind of brought this all together and organized it, and you call it Echo. So tell us more about that.
It has been an unfolding, evolving journey, I'll tell you that much.
Oh, I am sure.
when we first started, it really did start as simply as if support is the thing that families feel they lack, and churches want to be able to care for more families in this way, then let's solve that problem. Let's fix the issue of support. And, you know, whether that's providing introductions to churches with social workers or helping, you know, meet needs of families who are wanting to place children in their home. Let's just figure out how we can do that and how we can mobilize churches and remove some barriers that churches maybe have felt in getting something like that off the ground. And then it pretty quickly turned into not just that, but a unique opportunity to stabilize a family. They weren't involved with foster care. But there was a risk of that family fracturing, and we got invited to help stabilize that family in a really unique way. And, from that point, it really has grown into, not only helping stabilize foster families, and adoptive families post-placement, but preventative services for families. In fact, 60 to 70% of the work that we do now is on the prevention side, the preservation side, to keep families safely together and prevent the need for foster care in the first place.
Right. Well, and we use this, we use a stream analogy, you know, I always forget the
Desmond Tutu.
Yeah, no, I know that. Oh, yeah. So, Desmond Tutu says, you know, we have to stop pulling kids out of the water, figure out why they're falling in.
That's right.
And there's a pastor, is it Dr. Oh, I can't think of the name. You might think of it. It talked about like this whole process and what that looks like specifically in the context of foster care and adoption. So, you know, that foster care and adoptive, like that's that midstream that's pulling kids out of the water. And we will always support families because we know firsthand, like we need this support. Uh-huh. And maybe because we've, I think, got these great partnerships with our local churches and we've been able to identify families and say, you know, these are families that need your support and continued support. But what Randall was saying is, you know, we kind of had this opportunity in the beginning of Echo to look upstream and say, can we prevent a kid from falling in the water in the first place? And what does that look like? You know, so caseworkers saying, we've got this side of things for foster care, but what if we keep these kids out of foster care? What does that look like? And so we thought, well, absolutely. Like, you know, if we can keep a family stabilized, so their kids never enter foster care, then that's huge. And then we can't ignore the downstream. So, you know, there are some kids that are going to slip through the cracks. There are kids that are going to, you know, go through the foster care system and get to aging out without a permanent family. In fact, in our state, we live in Virginia, Virginia's 50th on permanency for kids in foster care, meaning we have more kids aging out of foster care without a permanent family. Mm-hmm. And we know statistically, it's just really bleak. Like 89% of these kids will wind up homeless, incarcerated, trafficked, pregnant, or dead within 2 years. So we're always going to support these kids as well, and whatever we can do to help them find stability so they don't fall victim to that. They don't end up a statistic, and they don't wind up back at the top of the stream with their kids falling in, you know, the same path.
That's
and
right.
It becomes a generational cycle.
Yeah. I think what we've seen as we've learned more about the work that we do, which is funny because we did not come into this work as experts. We just came into it we came into it with a big passion and a roadblock that we were trying to remove. And then, you know, we keep getting to talk about it. So that's, and as we talk about it, we learn more. And one of the things that we learned is that foster care really is, for all of the social issues that we're focused on, not only just in churches, but, you know, as a nation, all those social issues have an intersection upstream with foster care.
Yeah, there's a pipeline.
Yeah. And if we can tighten down and close that pipeline, then we can help solve or reduce some of the burden of all the other things downstream that we're trying to solve in our nation today.
Yeah, I tell you, and we've seen the same thing happen with just, I started a friend and I and some more moms, the little group called Restoring Dignity, and that's exactly what we're seeing. It was just getting new clothing to kids who came into care. Now, every week, guys, it's an email. Can you help this family catch up on their rent, get groceries? Because they don't want to go into a shelter or into care. And,
right.
Man, it's just such a privilege. But, you know, you look at it and go, okay, Lord, this way we're going now, right?
Right. So, yeah, exactly.
I love that journey with him and how you just stay in step with them. And I can get out of step really quick, but if I daily choose to stay in step with them, how he just, hey, we're going this way today. Have you found that? And you found that with Echo as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it goes back to the analogy of being on the path, right?
Yep,
like
yep.
The light is lighting that next step. And so it's almost easy to say like, well, this is what God seems to be showing us. This is what seems to be next.
Yeah. Well, sure. And too, like one of the things that has really started getting some attention lately is the aspect of kinship care.
Yes.
And in our state particularly, there are 65,000 that estimated 65,000 kinship care providers that are not on the state's roll. These are just, you know, grandmothers, aunts, uncles,
yeah,
who are picking up, you know, the pieces for these their relatives' mm-hmm. children and caring for them. And a lot of times they go unnoticed,
right?
And also unsupported. And I think that's part of, for us, even though it's kind of a bridge between family preservation and foster care, we do still look at that as a family preservation, because there is a familial preservation that's happening, even
right.
if the biological parents are out of the picture for the moment.
Mm-hmm.
There's a cultural preservation that is able to remain intact. There's a social preservation that is able to stay intact for these kids.
Yeah.
And so that's a big deal for us as well, to help make sure that these kinship families
mm-hmm.
are not overlooked.
Yeah.
And, I mean, we talk to churches a lot, and, you know, one of the biggest aha is when we ask them, do you know if you have any grandmoms that are caring for grandkids? And they're like, well, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well,
this is kinship.
Right.
This is
uh-huh.
this is what, and they're like, oh
yeah, I get it. Yeah.
We can come with them, right. come to them with these same ideas and resources. Yeah. Yes.
Well, and I'll wrap with this maybe, is that, you know, to kind of circle it all back around to the church. We started in this context of support, knowing what our church brought to us, and then mm-hmm. just reaching out to other churches and kind of helping them become aware of the needs and then equipping them in whatever way. But a lot of times it's like tangible resources, like you talked about, you know, new clothes. And so we just decided, what are the things that are most often requested? And we'll just keep those like on site. So for us, it's diapers, like
yes.
formula, car
yes.
seats, twin beds and cribs. So that's what we just always have. And so what we do, you know, we get these calls from caseworkers or whoever and say, you know, we have a grandma, we have a bio mom, or we have a foster family that's taking in a new placement. And, you know, they're set for two kids, but they're willing to take the full sibling set of four, but they need two beds and they need them by 7 p.m. tonight.
Happens like all the time.
Calls,
yes.
Right. All the time.
Uh-huh.
We're like, we're going to be equipped to meet those needs.
Yep.
But what we've seen over and over again is that the resources are great. Like, they allow people to say yes in those situations. Or we had a grandma recently that said, someone told me that you guys do diapers every month. And if I can count on diapers, I think I can bring in my grandbaby. But that diapers, cost of diapers was going to be so prohibitive that it would have kept her from being able to say yes to bring in her grandbaby as she was already raising other grandkids. So we know resources can be huge, but I think what happens is when we get the church involved,
mm-hmm.
it's that community support
yep.
that happens. So we'll get what we noticed, because we've been doing this now 3 years, is there are people that were really struggling that aren't calling us anymore. And when we reach out to them, it's because the church is so well wrapped around them, so
oh,
well
that
supported.
Is awesome.
They don't need us anymore. And that's the goal.
Yeah.
That's the win.
Work
right?
yourself out of a job. That's right.
Exactly.
It has always been our aim to be invisible.
Yes.
And let the church be the hero when it comes to meeting these needs. So
yeah. Oh, I couldn't agree more. And like you said, Kelly, you know, it's not, they just don't know. And
right.
and when we can go in and share and say, you know, say, hey, you know, Miss Jones, she's got her granddaughter. She probably needs some support. Well, they love her. Yeah, they want to support
yeah.
her.
Yeah.
You know,
uh-huh.
and honestly, it's the way we did it 100 years ago.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly.
Oh, well, guys, this is great. I'm so grateful to you for sharing your story, sharing your time with me today, because I'm thinking you may have someone already wanting in the office where you're trying to talk in private. I know how that works, but where can we find you guys? Because I think you're so encouraging and you're so real. And so where can folks find you and just kind of follow your story?
You could go to on the web. You could go to weareTheEcho.org. But you can also find us on social media, on Facebook. You can just search We Are The Echo or Echo Family Care Partners on both Facebook and Instagram.
Oh, that is perfect. And I do love wearetheecho.org. I like reading what you guys share and what you write, and I love the pictures too. So thank you for sharing. Thanks for your time today, guys. We sure love you and we're so grateful for you.
Thank you, Annette.